Welcome to the SMA News Today podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Schaefer. I have SMA Type 2, and I am a columnist and forums director for SMANewsToday.com. Welcome to the SMA News Today podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Schaefer. And joining me today is Candace Welch from Los Angeles, California. Candace wears multiple hats. She is a DEI practitioner, a founder of a nonprofit called I Am Abled. And this year she won the Miss Wheelchair competition. So I'm sure we will talk about that throughout this episode. And Candace and I got to meet at this year's Care SMA conference. So Candace, really glad to have you today and talk more about your story.
Thank you, Kevin. I am excited to be here. Thank you for having me on the show and looking forward to chatting it up with you today.
Oh, same here. Absolutely. And if listeners can't tell, I'm getting over a cold here. So I'm going to let Candace do most of the talking here because I know I sound a little off today. But Candace, to start off, so, you know, like I said, we've got to meet at the conference this year, saw you in your Miss Wheelchair attire, and we'll definitely talk more about that. But to start off, can you talk about just what it was like for you growing up with SMA and a little bit about your background?
Yeah, for sure. So I was born in 1985, and there wasn't a lot of technology out, not a lot of medical advances. They were literally just kind of like understanding what SMA even was and what it looked like. So it was a different time. And I would say definitely, had I not had the parents that I had that were very in tune to their child, and really advocated for doctors and help the healthcare industry to really take it serious, you know, I'm very thankful for that, because there's a lot of times when you don't have that level of support. So I was very fortunate, and they stayed on it. I was able to have a pretty good childhood. I'm not going to say that it was all bad. My parents really did work hard to make sure I had a childhood. Because as you know, as a kid, especially a very young child, and you're diagnosed with SMA, it's a lot of doctor's appointments, it's a lot of therapy, it's a lot of differences. It's very different. And my parents were very adamant, like, you're going to have a childhood. So I had all the fun birthdays and went to Disneyland and, you know, got to spend time with all my cousins. So that was nice. I don't think I really noticed a difference until I got to like maybe elementary to like junior high, where I was getting bullied because at the time I was still walking. And, you know, when you have SMA, you have a different gait to your walk. So, and I like to kind of give people a visualization. It's almost kind of like a penguin, how they walk. And so when I was walking, kids would make fun of me. And the level of bullying I endured was severe. So I would come home crying, like, why are they so mean to me? I just want to be their friends. I just want to play with their dolls and be in the sandbox, you know? I wasn't able to play dodgeball. I wasn't able to jump rope. I wasn't able to, you know, do hop and skip. I wasn't able to do those things. So, you know, on top of that, and on top of being bullied, it was just a lot to deal with. So I really depended on my family to kind of give me solace and protect me. But I would say, yeah, life got different around that age, the junior high and elementary. And that was when I also discovered Muscular Dystrophy Association, MDA. And they had a summer camp every year. And for a couple years, they kept asking my mother, bring Candace. She would be great. You know, bring her. She would enjoy it. And my mother was more so like, like, my child's too young. I'm not letting her out of my sight. And you want to take her to Big Bear? Oh, no. Like, it ain't happening. And so I had to beg and plead. I was like, Mom, I feel so out of place here. I just want to go somewhere where people look like me. And so she finally, after some deep prayer, she finally agreed. And that was the best thing that could have ever happened to me. Because for 1 week out of the year, just one, I was able to be able to be around people that looked like me, understood what I was going through. And we were able to just be kids. Like, I was able to do horseback riding. I was able to do canoeing. You know, I was able to do arts and crafts. And there was somebody there that understood me, understood my needs, and just really didn't focus on the fact that I was different because in that moment, I wasn't. I was normal. I was a part of the normal crew because everyone else looked and felt the same way as I did. So that was a game changer for me because it allowed me to have a friendship network that I have still to this day. Like those people I met when I was like 6, 7, 8, 9 are still friends with me today. Some of them I've lost. You know, I definitely have my share of losses when it comes to friends, especially with, you know, our diseases. But I still very much am so honored to have met so many great people and call them my friends. And so that was a game changer for me. It really showed me community. It showed me friendship. It showed me that although I might be a little different, and I say that with a quote, it was nice to just be quote unquote normal and, you know, feel like I wasn't being judged. So that really played a true piece of confidence in my story as a child. And I will always cherish that. But it was hard. I was in a lot of therapy. I was constantly going to see doctors. And so that's why I feel like my parents worked so hard to make sure that when I wasn't in therapy, I had as much of a normal childhood as possible.
Thank you so much for sharing that. That's, I mean, it's, I think the experience of a lot of people of that dealing with that isolation. And yeah, I mean, I've been to camp before and SMA conferences, and it absolutely is that time where, yeah, you feel like you don't have to worry about being judged or looked down upon or anything like that. And it really opens you up. And so that I think ties into, so I mean, with making other friends who are disabled, like, because obviously you do a lot now as an adult with your nonprofit and being a DEI practitioner. Sorry, my voice is all over the place today. But are obviously a huge disability advocate today. So can you talk about how those early days really paved the way for what you do now and just that entire journey?
Yeah, for sure. So the woman I am today is because I was able to live the life I did as a teenager and a young adult. I'm going to be completely honest, and a lot of people don't like to hear this part of my story, but when I was 17 to probably 33, I did not have a close-knit community as much as I did as a younger child. Like I said, I lost a lot of my friends, and we were kind of moving in different courses of life. And I was gearing up for, you know, senior year of high school, going into college. So I lost touch of a lot of people, and I lost touch of that SMA community. And so I went a long time without that community, that network, and it felt lonely. It felt like everyone around me did not understand, and I felt like I had to overcompensate when I was in certain rooms with people because nobody else looked like me. Nobody else was dealing with what I had to deal with. I was around a lot of able-bodied individuals. That was my day-to-day. And in college, the same thing. I was around able-bodied individuals 24/7. I was the only one that was quote-unquote different. And so I think in those early years, I lost a little bit of myself, a piece of myself, because I was constantly like, I have to prove that I'm worthy to be in this room because I'm so different. And so I kind of just removed myself further and further from the disability community. And I was like, well, that was my past. This is my current. This is the life I'm living. You know, I'm trying to work. I'm in a lot of different industries. For a long time, I was in the entertainment industry. So that's, you don't see any level of disability really in that industry. It's so taboo. And I was doing internships with, major companies, handling red carpets. And I was always the one that was different. And so I just said, well, this is going to be my life, so I might as well deal with it. And it put something inside of me that it almost put a shame inside of me, like, oh, I'm so different. Like, I'm not comfortable in my own skin. I don't know what to do. I don't know who to call because I don't really have that community anymore. And that hurt. And so I think the reason why I jumped full force back into advocacy and community is because I was missing it. I wanted to get back to home because it's home to me. Like when I know that I have friends in a community that truly understands what I'm going through and can relate to me, that's home. So I had to come back and come back home and really just kind of get into that community again. And that's what led me to want to go into DEI, because prior to that, I was in contracts and procurement for LA County, and I hated it. I hated going to work. I hated every aspect of it. And so at my job, they started a new department, and it was called DEI. And I was like, oh, what is this? And it was like a moth to a flame. I was so happy. It combined my desire of advocacy and justice, but it also allowed me to put that in government and, public policy. So, just realizing there was a job that could combine both of these, I was like, oh, this is it. This is where I want to be. And so in that, I said, okay, well, everyone's doing DEI. Everyone is. What makes me so special? And so that's when I realized I'm supposed to do DEI, but I'm supposed to put the accessibility factor on it. Because I'm the one that has the lived experience. I know what it's like to not to be a Black woman, to be an educated Black woman, but then also put that as a disabled Black woman. I know what all those, intersectionalities feel like. And I felt like nobody else could do that and tell my story better than I could. And I wanted to be that representation for others, which is how I formed I Am Abled, my nonprofit, because I wanted to show other individuals that if I can do it, I'm not saying it's going to be easy. I'm not saying it's going to be, fun times every day. And I'm not even telling you, it's not, there's no one that's going to hold your hand through the tough times. You're going to have to be an adult and go through this. But I wanted to show people throughout every barrier and obstacle, I was still able to achieve my goal, which was to go to school, graduate, and be gainfully employed. And not just be gainfully employed, but be purposely fulfilled in that employment as well. And I wanted to show someone that just because you've never traveled doesn't mean you can't. Just because you have never experienced a certain part of life doesn't mean you can't strive to, have that. Because it's been an up and down roller coaster for me. Life is an up and down roller coaster. So I wanted to show others that with the right resources, you can do it. And that's why I tell people I never really want to be an inspiration. I always want to be a resource, though. Inspiration can fade, but a good valued resource will never be will never be out of season. And so when people approach me and they say, oh, you're so inspiring, I always say, thank you, but I would rather show you how to do the same thing. I want to show you that you can do it, even if we have to modify it, you can still do it if you want to. So I always rather be a resource. And that's what led me to my advocacy. That's what led me to Miss Wheelchair California. That's what led me to just being vocal and making and holding people accountable. I stopped being quiet because the quiet mouse doesn't get the cheese. So I stopped being quiet and I let my voice be heard. And I promise you, once you hear my voice, you'll never forget it because I'm loud and I'm proud of that. You know, that's what makes a great advocate, someone that sees something and speaks about it. You have to talk about it. You have to bring it to the forefront of the conversation. And that's what I hope I do every time I'm in those spaces.
Wow, so many great quotes there, but I really love especially that that's something I haven't even considered before. I mean, I've written about the whole, inspiration concept before, but I love that concept of like re being a resource is more important because I think that's the trap that so many of us fall into in our communities. Like, you get out of high school or even or college or whatever, and like you don't really know what practical steps to take next. And so that's where, it's we have to rely on each other for logistical and emotional and everything in between support to be able to achieve the goals we want to. And so I love how you put it there.
I mean, when I always tell people the reason why I started I Am Abled is because it's very simple. When you're a child, you have all the resources. There's people begging to give you stuff. And when you're in your elder years, you have resources, there's programs. But what about when you're an adult and you're just out here and living life? The resources are shorter. There's no one hand-holding you. But you've been handholded up until that point. So now it's like, oh, I'm out here on my own. Mom and dad aren't by my side. Family's not right here immediately. And what do I do? And you have to be an adult. And so I want to show people through I Am Abled, come here. Let us show you how to make that transition. And that's where that mentorship key comes in. I feel like for those with disabilities, we need that level of support. We need that level of transitional support. Because if you just, let's just say you've been living at home and now you want to move out, but you've been living at home for what, 30 something years, you might need a little help. And the people that are with you, they can only help you so much. You need someone that understands what it means to be disabled. Empathy can only go so far, but lived experience can take you all the way. So I want to be that person that is there to guide and help and answer questions and keep it real. It's going to be tough. It's going to be hard. There are days when I wake up and I'm like, not this shit again. Like, I'm tired of it. I want to go back to sleep. I'm over it and it hasn't even started. But I think the key part in that is that I don't give up. I don't let that defeat me. I keep getting up because number one, I'm here for a reason. I'm on this earth for a reason. And I believe that that is to tell my story and help others. I can't do that if I'm just gonna wallow and, be in the dark over here. I have to come out and show people. I have to be available. I have to be that resource. Because I didn't have that resource growing up. So I want to be what I didn't have.
I love that. And I want to backtrack just a sec. So, obviously you talked about the transition of like what sparked you getting back into advocacy in the community. But before that, you were talking about that in those in between years from like 17 to early 30s. So you mentioned like you did worked in the entertainment industry and did some other things. What were so after high school, what were those years like in terms of like did you go straight to living independently? What did you college and career? I know that's a lot. There's a lot to tackle there, but I was just curious, what were those in between years like for you?
So I moved out when I was 18. I moved out of the house. None of my family expected me to. They expected me to stay in Palmdale, California with my mother. And I absolutely hated Palmdale. I was 18 and it was like suburbia hell. So I was like, I've lived in Los Angeles all my life. I'm going back to LA. So I moved out. My mother thought I was crazy. And I got my first apartment in downtown LA and I started college. At the time, it was fashion school because I just was I was like, oh, I'm gonna go to fashion school and be a
Mm-hmm.
buyer for like Macy's or Nordstrom's, and that's
Mm-hmm.
what I was pursuing. So I moved to downtown LA, and that was the start of, oh shit, I'm out here as a full adult and no one's holding my hand. And that was tough because I'm 18 trying to navigate life as an adult. But then on top of that, I'm a black girl, life as an adult, and then I'm in Los Angeles. And for those who are not familiar with LA is a very busy place. People don't wait. There's no patience. I mean, it's on the go, on the go, on the go, and it's a lot of vanity. And and then going into the entertainment industry, I'm different, like I'm rolling up in this wheelchair, didn't have my own vehicle. I was on public transportation, having internships at some of the major companies such as like Sony and HBO, and I'm different rolling up in here in these offices, and they're like, well, what are you gonna do? Are you gonna get coffee? And I'm like, no, I'm here to run your red carpet. And they're looking at me like, I don't know about this. What is this? Is this some type of joke? Am I on punk? And so I had to really prove myself, all while going to school, paying rent. And back then, I thought it was high. I had a studio for $950, and I thought that was high. Nowadays in Los Angeles, you can't get a studio for less than $1,800. So, I'm dealing with all these, it's like sensory overload. And it took a lot. It took a lot out of me. It took a lot of my confidence. I tell you, if you're not strong enough, LA can break you. And I was born and raised here, and it was trying to break me. So, I would say, and then living with the disability that your muscles, your body is betraying you. Every single day you wake up and you're a little bit more tired. You have a little bit less energy. And it's like, oh, but they look at me as this 21-year-old because that's what I am. And I'm supposed to be full of fire and fun and energy and never get tired. But I was tired. And I had to push and push because I felt like I had to overcompensate for the fact that I was in this wheelchair. So it was a lot of mental toughness I had to have. Like, you have to be strong mentally to be an adult, period. But then to also live your life with a disability, you have to be mentally strong. Because your body, forget it, it's only going to give as much as it can. But that mind, you have to be strong enough to handle those stares, those, conversations to the left of you. And even when you're tired, I tell people, yes, there are times when you have to rest. Everyone needs rest. But I also tell people, I didn't have that privilege. I had to work. Because if I wanted to make a name for myself and I wanted people to take me seriously, they had to see that I had the same amount of hustle as the girl that was coming behind me, but she was able-bodied. If I wanted the job, I had to prove to them, you didn't make a mistake hiring me. I'm going to fulfill all of the needs and I'm going to go above and beyond. And I had to do that. And no matter how tired I was, I still had to be mentally strong to take that on. And I had to be mentally strong to be an advocate for myself for when things were inaccessible. I had to bring them up to people and say, hey, this is a barrier. I can't do this. Or, hey, I'm on public transportation. I'm not going to be able to get from Hollywood to Santa Clarita in an hour because I don't have my own personal car. I'm going to have to do this on public transportation. And I had to be okay with bringing those reasonable accommodations to the forefront. I had to be okay with that. And I had to be okay being an advocate for myself because nobody else out here was going to do it. Nobody else is going to advocate for Candace like Candace can. And I had to be strong enough to do that And I also had to be ready for the no's because they come. They came all the time. So many times I went into interviews or I went up to apartment building managers and saying, "Hey, I'd like to rent this apartment, but can you accommodate me by making this modification?" "No, we don't want to." Okay, well, this is in my price budget and it's close to my job. Can I get this as a reasonable accommodation?" "No." "Okay, so you can just say no to me like that?" "Yep, we can. We can. Because we're private. This is our building. We don't have to do anything." And so I realized there, I was like, "Oh, housing's gonna be an issue." Okay, so now I've gotta figure out how I'm gonna find accessible housing that's still in my price budget as a young 20-year-old. That was difficult. So I always tell people, don't look at your physical strength. That's gonna come and go. But that mental strength, you have to be able to push through even when they say no. Push through. You have to keep going. And someone told me a long time ago, when it's raining and thundering and there's a huge storm, don't stop in the middle of the storm. Because then you're just in the storm. You have to keep going. Because eventually that storm is going to turn into sunshine, cool breeze, sunny days. But you have to go through the storm. It's not just one storm. You could have a storm, back-to-back storms. You could have a storm that lasts 3 years. You got to keep going through it, though. That's where that mental strength comes in. Because everybody has storms. And I tell you, as a disabled person working in both entertainment and government, I know what it feels like for them not to care. They don't care that you didn't get any sleep last night. They don't care that your caregiver didn't make it to you in time, so now you have to take the day off. They don't care. They can say they do, but they don't care because you know what? Jimmy that walked through here on time, he was on time. We expect you to be on time too. We don't care that your caregiver wasn't available. We don't care that you were in pain all night. We hired you to do a job. And so I had to prepare myself for that. There was no room for excuses. If you hired me, I have to show up. Doesn't matter if I didn't get no sleep last night because my nerve system was having a Tetris game inside my body. It doesn't matter. You hired me. I show up. So you have to be ready for that.
Well, again, I love all of that. And you brought up my next topic, which ties into all of this. So in terms of advocacy, going through constant hurdles, but what has been your experience with hiring caregivers? Because I know you said when you were younger, you were still ambulatory, but once you moved out and needed that support, what's been kind of your overall experience there with hiring and managing caregivers?
Oh, Kevin,
I know,
the
quite a loaded question that I would
world.
also, I know it's a whole podcast in and of itself.
But the world of hiring caregivers, well, it's been an interesting journey. I definitely needed caregivers as I was moving out, and just learning even where to find them was a struggle. So I had to learn, like, oh, do I put an ad out? Where do I do that at? And then you have these strangers that you're interviewing, and you're putting them in your home where your personal things are, and they're responsible for you and helping you. You don't know this person from Adam and Eve. They could be serial killer for all you know. So I definitely had to learn the hard way a lot. Like, I've had items stolen from me. I've had money stolen from me. I've had caregivers drop me that causes an additional injury. Like, it's been the whole gamut. I've had caregivers who take the job, say they're going to be on time, never on time. Say they're going to show up, don't show up. I've had caregivers who don't answer their phone. So I definitely understand what it feels like to have to hire and fire caregivers. All I can say is do your due diligence. You have to, I would always say go by referrals first. If somebody you know might know someone that watches kids or they trust them, see if they'd be interested. If you don't have an option for referrals, then put out an ad. Nowadays it's a lot better because they have more job ad companies, but definitely you utilize care.com and utilize Indeed. Stay away from Craigslist. You learn the hard way. But yeah, just really trusting your gut because you're gonna have to end up trusting this individual to come to work and not harm you. And that can be difficult. But you have to do it because you need the care. And so I also know that finances come into play with that. I don't think people realize how much money care costs. But as I'm 37, and today, in this day, in this time, in this year, at any given month, I can spend about $2,000 on care out of pocket. That's not to say that I don't get support elsewhere from like IHSS and things like that, but out of pocket, when you need good care and you want them to show up and do the job, you're gonna have to kick in. Because you want someone that's good and reliable, you're gonna have to kick in. So on any given month, I could be spending upwards of $2,000 on care. And then put that on top of rent, on top of food. There goes the budget. It's blown out, So making sure that you have the finances to get the care, whether that's a part-time job or whatever in the case may be, if you're able to have a job, great, but care cost. And if you want good care, it costs a little bit more. So I'm constantly working to make sure that I can afford the care. And there is not an option for me to not have care. Like I have to have it. It's a necessity. It's like food. I need to have it. Somebody has to come in here and help me. And so I always have to have a reserve of money just in case something happens because the government's only going to help you so much. Family can only help you so much. And so you've got to be able to really look at your finances and say, save. I tell people as much as possible, save. Save whatever you can. And great, if you don't have to use it on care, great, travel somewhere. Go buy yourself something nice. But always keep a reserve because you never know when you're going to need to have to hire someone to come in and help you. And you want to have that money available because care is not an, it's not optional for me. For me to get up and do my job, I need a caregiver to come in here and help me get up. And I need her to be happy, and I need her to be content. So you have to pay for good help. So, yeah, I feel like legislatively we need to do better with caregivers paying them more because we would have a better pool of candidates to pick from if we paid them more. So, and I always tell people, you have to be considerate of your care. They are not slaves. They are people that are there to help you. So how you talk to them, be respectful. These are people that are there to help you. So you don't want to be disrespectful to them and you want to pay them accordingly because if they're helping you, you want them to stay around. So I always tell people, hiring caregivers, have your own routine. Like for myself, I have my own personal application that I created. And I pay for my own background checks because I want to make sure that when you step into my house, I have information on you and I know that you're someone safe and someone trustworthy, at least that you can pass a background check,
Yeah.
I always tell people I have my own application that they have to fill out. I have my own interviewing process that they have to go through. They have a probation period. I guess it's a job, so they have to go through this to get the job. And I always tell people, if you're not happy with your care, have a conversation. If it doesn't get better, you're gonna have to let them go. And knowing how to let someone go is also a good skill set, because you have to understand, give them time, alert them. You have to go through the same processes as if they worked at, an agency. So I just tell people, the more you do it, the better you get at it. Get at it. I used to get robbed. I don't get robbed no more. I know what to do. I know what I need to do to take care of myself. And I'm always an open book if anyone ever has questions about caregivers, wants to see some of the, I mean, I can even send you my own application. I do it all online. Like I said, I want to be a resource. Come to me and say, hey, I would love to take a look at your application and see if I could use it. Of course. Here's the link. Look at it and make your own. Because I want people to be empowered. I had to learn the hard and long way. I don't want it to be the same for other people. Use me as a resource. Come to me. Ask me questions. And if I know, I'll help you. If I don't, I'll try to lead you in another direction. But I want to be a resource. So, and if I don't know nothing else, I know about caregivers.
I feel like each of these responses could be a TED talk. Like, you should definitely do one if you haven't before. Yeah.
I want to do a TED Talk so bad.
You should. I don't know what the process is for that, but totally reach out to them. But yeah.
Thank
But
you.
oh, I love all that. And no, I love everything you said. I'm in that process too. You definitely learn with each new experience and each person you hire and all the loopholes you have to get around. It's a never-ending game, but you said it very eloquently.
Those loopholes, yeah. And
Yeah.
that's to say, align yourself with community, because you learn so much. Like, I even at your SMA, I learned a lot of new things. I'm like, oh, okay, I need to try that. I need to do that. You learn as you go. We don't all have the same answers. I could come to you about something and you give me some advice, and then I talk to Henry over here and he give me a different set of advice. And you have to use your own good judgment and make it your own.
Absolutely. And yeah, it's just everyone's experience is so different. And there's so many factors that come into play. But yeah, I'm always learning from people in the community, both like through the podcast and then through conferences and everything else. So absolutely. Well, Gaddis, this has been so great. And just wrapping up here, I know we could go on for hours on this, on all these things, but do you have any advice for others in the community, particularly others with SMA, and feel free to talk about anything as in regards to your daily life or career, but just anyone who may be doubting whether they can have the independence that you have or the goals you do, et cetera.
If you have doubt, that's normal. My whole 20s was doubt. I definitely say, what has helped me just with those doubts and that like fear is I had to go through therapy, and I'm proud to say that I'm still in therapy every week. I'm committed to it, and it's not just for those who are going through a hard time in life. It's like self-care for me. I need to be able to talk to someone about those emotions I'm feeling. And being disabled is hard. It's very hard. So you have to be able to work through those emotions. So therapy definitely helped me, and it continues to help me. But I would say, like, if you're sitting back at home listening to this, and you're wondering if you can live an independent life, you're listening to two people that have they're doing it. They're living independently. Independently is not just you having your own apartment. Independently is a mindset. It's a mindset. Don't get confused what society tell you. Some people can live in a home with their family and still be independent because it's a mind thing. Do you make your own decisions? Do you take power over what you feel and can do? That's independence to me. It's not about having your own apartment. It's not about having your own vehicle. Those are elements of independence for sure. But that's not the only thing that makes you independent. And you take it step by step. I moved out when I was 18. Did I ever move back home? Yep. Moved home twice. Had to restart. When things were shifting and it was a bit chaotic, I had to bring it back down and I had to go back home and reset. And there's no shame in that. I don't think that when you are living with SMA, especially SMA, because it's like you're fighting your body. You want to do something and your body's like, eh, we ain't got it. Nope, it ain't happening today. And you're like, but I really want to do this. And you're like, nah, if you try to pick that up, you're going to drop it. And so just no. So when you're living with a disability, especially with SMA, you have to learn to work with your body. And I know it's so cliche, but you have to listen to your body. And you can only do so much. Don't try to do more than you are fully capable of. It's okay to sit down. It's okay to rest. It's okay to have a lazy day. It's okay to give your body time to rest. And at 37, I am just realizing and incorporating that because when I was in my 20s, it was go, 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 go. And I'm not gonna lie, I had fun. But as I get older, the wisdom that I have, yes, I have SMA, but does SMA have me? No, it doesn't. I work with my body. I'm tired of fighting it, so I'm gonna work with it now. And there are some things that I can't do. Like I was telling someone the other day, eating out in public for me has become more and more difficult because chairs and tables are always not accessible. The width from the table to me, food dropping, and I don't have a caregiver there with me. It's almost not worth it sometimes. So if I'm feeling super tired that day, I probably will just take the food to go and go home and eat because I know that that's more comfortable for me. I don't feel like dealing with the table and all that. I don't have to. I'll go home and eat. And if one day I'm feeling like it and I'm a little bit stronger that day, then I'll eat at the restaurant. You just have to give and take. That's independence still to me though. Because I can make those decisions. Some days I'm tired and I just don't have it. Some days I have a little bit extra strength and I feel like I can take on the world. But just knowing that balance and that life with SMA is not a death sentence. I still believe that everyone's life is worth thriving for. You don't want to just be on this earth to survive it because that's horrible. You want to thrive within your life. And even when you have SMA or a disease that doesn't really want to work with you, should I say, you still have a life worth living. So what, you have to modify it. Half of my friends love all my modified life hacks. Like legit, I have, the technology we have today. Some of my friends are like, oh my God, I want to get a door lock that can be voice activated. They don't even need it, but they love that I have it. And now they want to get it. So there's always some lights at the end of the tunnel. Find what works for you. Do some research. If you are working from home and the setup is not right, get a standing desk that goes up and down with the push of a button to make it easier for you. Find the things that make life easier for you and embrace them because you only get this one life. And while I'm on this earth, I'm going to live it. No matter how modified that may look, no matter how hard it may be at times, I'm going to live my life and I'm going to do it loudly and boldly so that you, wherever you are able to see it and want to take the decision to live your life boldly. The more bold lives we live, the more voices are heard, the more change happens, the more policy is affected. And then hopefully we're living in a world where everyone is equal and it's everyone has equitable standards. Until then, I'm gonna keep opening my mouth because there's always something that can be better, especially within the world of disability. We are nowhere near 100% accessibility. And if I'm going to be completely honest, on a scale of 0 to 100, I think as far as accessibility, and I'm just talking about in the USA, I think we're about at 40%. I think we have a long way to go. But 40 is better than zero. And the more voices that are out there talking and advocating, we can move that 40 to 50 to 60 to 70 until we get to 100%. And that's my goal. I want to get to 100% and I want to maintain that. That's the level of maintaining we have to be at 100% where everyone has access. So until that happens, you're going to hear from me.
Reach. Oh, don't stay quiet. It's like, yeah. I could not have said any of that better. No, thank you so much for sharing, Candice. That was
And
spot
I want everyone to follow me on Instagram.
I was just about to say, go ahead. Yeah.
It's under my name, which is CANDISWELCH, all one word, Candace Welch. And next week, I'll be competing for Miss Wheelchair America. So I would love everyone's support. Follow me, send me some good vibes. And I hope to see you out there because I'm coming to a city near you.
Oh, definitely. Like, I mean, yeah, and you got all your links there to your site and everything. So definitely give Candace a follow. I'll put the handle in the description here. But Candace, thank you again so much. This has been just spot on, and especially with like, I know this episode will go out in September, but like it's so perfect with like, you know, coming right off SMA Awareness Month. And also want to plug that you did a story for our community spotlight initiative that will have been published by the time this goes out. So yeah, but love everything you said. Yeah, everyone, all listeners out there, definitely connect with Candace on social media and everywhere else.
And me and Kevin just met like
We did.
over 2 months ago, and we're already fast friends. So I hope that you can see I'm very approachable. I'm very friendly. I'm always looking at my DMs. It's not someone else looking at them. It's me. I'm the one responding. So just reach out, contact me.
Absolutely. Well, Candace, thanks so much again. No, it's been great getting to know you, and this is just like phenomenal here. So, for our listeners out there, if you would like to hear more stories and conversations like this, you can subscribe to the SMA News Today podcast on any of our platforms. You can also connect with us directly on our forums and follow smanewstoday.com for all the latest SMA news and perspectives. I'm your host, Kevin Schaefer. Thanks so much for listening, and we will see you next time. Take care.
The information in our flash briefings and podcasts are provided for informational and educational purposes only. Be sure to tune in daily to SMA News Today for the latest news and perspectives regarding the disease. Discover more content that might be of interest to you at www.smanewstoday.com and be sure to follow us on social media and join our SMA News Today forums. A trusted SMA community ready to welcome you anytime.